Hello, welcome to the Ludlow Piano Festival podcast. We're here with Christina McMaster today. Hello, Christina.
Hello, Joel. Thank you so much for having me.
That's great. Great you can make it. Thanks for joining us on episode 3 of the podcast. We had a chat a few weeks ago now with Anne Lovett, the other week with David Owen Norris and Mark Bevington, all about their own repertoire and programs and piano playing and what they're looking forward to at the festival. So we're thrilled that we can now talk to you as someone who's not only been at the piano festival last year at the inaugural festival, but someone who's coming back again with something different. So just tell us a bit about yourself, Christina, and your background, and then maybe we can talk about those programs from the festival last year and upcoming.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited about coming back. And it's in about a month now. And it was such a special vibe the first year. So yeah, like you say, I'm coming back with something completely different. And maybe we can talk a little bit about that later. So a little bit about myself. Gosh, it's quite difficult to know how to start, but what I would say is, as a theme of what I do, generally I like to follow my curiosity and kind of see where that takes me. I feel like that's kind of been a pattern, and a way that I kind of evolve, and the way that I choose repertoire, and the way I approach the piano, and even the concerts that I give. But initially I started in a very, very traditional way in a sense. I had quite a lot of freedom initially, which I think was great. And I had to really fight to even start learning the piano, because I had two older sisters who were already playing. And, you know, being one of three children, piano lessons are expensive for parents. And like, you know, is she just wanting to do it because her sisters are doing it? I fought quite hard for that. And it was fortunate because my middle sister really didn't like playing the piano. So she used to hover outside in the bushes before her piano lesson. And then I would sort of see that she was still there when she should be in her lesson. And then eventually, because I think I had a very short lesson because I was quite young, maybe like 15 minutes. And then I managed to take over her time slot. So she got to stay outside and didn't have to go in. And then really it was just such a wonderful time, you know, that initial phase of just really feeling like a real sense of kind of excitement and flow, and couldn't wait to learn the next thing. And it just felt
so it was essentially fear of missing out that got you into the piano, was it? Or was there more to it than that? Did you take to it quite naturally and maybe take to it more than your sisters in a way?
Yeah, absolutely. It from my point of view, it definitely wasn't just another thing my sisters were doing that I also wanted to do. But I think my parents were concerned that maybe it was. And then I just loved every moment of exploring the piano. And I remember just sort of, even we had a piano in the house, just spending time with the instrument, just playing around, and probably not making much sense, but just really having a lot of fun exploring different sounds. And
you mentioned the word freedom there. When you was that a freedom to just explore the piano without too much pressure to do sort of rigorous practice, or did that come from your piano teacher and from a sort of the musical culture you were in at the time, or was that something more personal to you that you felt was important?
Yeah, it's probably a bit of all of those, actually. I think in hindsight, and certainly now, I feel that freedom is so important. But in order to get better and evolve at the instrument, you definitely have to have discipline. But I think you can find a freedom within that when it comes from within you, and you're making your own choices and artistic choices, and even making your own practice schedule. Mm-hmm. But I think initially, just in those very first few years, there was no one around me who was really, you know, very high level professional musicians. It was all people who like love music. And like, even my mum's experience, she used to play in like youth orchestras in Ireland. She played violin and she would also play guitar and sing as well. And, you know, it was really just about loving your instrument and loving the joy of playing. So there was never immediately, oh my goodness, she must be here. But, you know, that came shortly afterwards. And I also remember my grandmother, when I was playing my little pieces and she would listen. And then she used to always tell me the story about how her grandfather used to go to the opera in order to be uplifted, to be healed. That was his way of like changing how he was feeling. And so a bit of freedom. And then I think
we can relate to that. And a lot of people I've been speaking to through connections at the Piano Festival especially talk about sort of that nostalgia or a certain person in their early childhood who sort of shone a light on music for them, particularly classical music in these contexts I've been speaking to people. Do you think that's really important that we sort of, you know, learn music through other people? We can't, in a way, we can't really just listen to something and understand it. Do you think we have to listen through someone else in those early days to really understand what's going on?
Yeah, I think it's everything adds up into your own experience. And it's only in hindsight that you can look back and see how all these different elements contribute. And, I feel now, especially with what I'm doing with Lie Down and Listen, I can look back and see, gosh, yes, my grandmother, her words really did add, it really guided me into what I'm doing now. Mm. And I also remember my grandfather playing the Warsaw Piano Concerto. And I think he just played like probably the opening passage. But I was totally blown away, you know, like this man sitting down and playing all these big chords at the piano. I was like, wow, you know, I want to do that. every encounter informs your playing and your approach.
And do you teach, Christina? Do you have piano students?
I do teach, and I find it an incredible like learning experience. So I teach at Cheltenham Ladies College, which is nearby to where I live, and also just sometimes on like adult courses as well. And it's a really, really important part, I think, of understanding how people approach in different ways. And then also I find it such a big responsibility, and it's something that I want to show people what has made me excited about music. And it's not all about sort of being the best virtuoso there is, but being able to listen to sound and listen to music and understand the context as well is I think can be really exciting.
Yeah, and I think your programs are always really interesting in that respect. They sort of shine a light on what music can do, as much as, you know, just music for music's sake. You know, it's not just notes on the page to impress people. It's it's got the potential to take you on a journey and make you feel things deeply and connect with other people. So tell us a bit then about your style of program, if I can say that, and what leads you towards certain pieces over others, and how you put things together to take people on a journey, because you certainly did that last year at the Piano Festival with a fantastic program. I was just looking over it again. You played such a mix of things from Debussy to Scarlatti to Ligeti to Bill Evans, and it was a brilliantly put together program, but it was obviously very carefully crafted to take people on a journey which had some real high, you know, climactic moments like the Devil's Staircase by Ligeti, but it also had some really calm peace and tranquility as well. So can you tell us about your programming approach and how you put these pieces together and what draws you to certain pieces and composers over others?
Yeah. It's always a bit different, but I think also what you said is interesting about how, using music as a way to connect with people. I mean, obviously when you're young, virtuosity and playing very impressively is part of what draws you to the instrument. Drew me to the instrument, and like probably far earlier than I should have. I was tackling really big repertoire, and I was just very fortunate that I had teachers who allowed me to do that, because I think that's also part of one of my own characteristics, that I want to try those challenges. And it's only through like doing really stretching yourself that you can evolve. So that's one side of things. But then I think more recently, in more recent years, I want to try to, well, it's not about trying, but it's also, I want to share what I feel as a connection to the instrument and with sound and music. I want to share that in the concert experience. So it's less about me saying, sort of less of a circus act, more of a, hopefully something that sort of takes you more into a spiritual realm, whatever that is, for someone else. And I think it's because music is something that we can't touch. It's something which sort of spans over, I think, different worlds, you know. And so the approach to the program is to, or programming is to just be like, oh, look at this, you know, look at this sound. And and then sometimes it will occur to me, this could match really well with this. And then I think it's just also important that people are not expecting what's coming next at every moment, because when we know every single note, or if we know, well, that piece sounds like this, but sometimes it can sound different when it's placed in between two different pieces. And I think that's what gets people's listening much more sharpened. And they're like, oh, actually, I've never heard Debussy like this, because I've never heard it after some Ligeti, and actually it sounds completely different. Or like playing Scarlatti after Ligeti, and you're like, well, actually there's some similarities there. It sounds much more modern than I usually consider Scarlatti. And I think being able to listen in your own unique way, and to just be totally immersed in the music, is such an incredible experience. And I do think sometimes in certain concerts or whatever concert settings, sometimes people feel, well, oh yeah, I know this one, I know how that goes. I think it can also be the same for musicians, I think. But I think every time that we have to, every time we play, we have to like approach as if this is the first time. And I think that's something that you can develop. And I certainly feel, you know, music that I play, I find myself like entering into a kind of a space, whether it's in performance. I mean, it's usually in performance that I'm like, wow, I've never heard this piece played in that way before. And I think I don't want to play something identically to how I played it last week, because I'm different than I was last week.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And the programs you play, I feel would allow you maybe to do that a bit more, because maybe the programs you curate for Lie Down and Listen are slightly different to maybe a conventional concert setting. But looking through what's coming up on the Saturday at the festival in May, 10 p.m. slot,
I'm usually
tell us about that then, because we've got it's a late one, but I think everyone will be really ready for it by then on a Saturday evening, having heard some, you know, wonderful recitals through the day, and this is this will be a real time of reflection, but also some fascinating music. Again, really eclectic with Meredith Monk and some birds, Rachmaninoff, Debussy, Cage. So tell us about what we can expect through that program then, and maybe what journey you've been on with those pieces, and maybe how they've changed for you over time and through performance and practice.
It's going to be such a beautiful experience, especially in that setting. So everyone will be there lying down, and I'm bringing along all my mattresses, so everyone will be very comfortable, mattresses and cushions and blankets. So it will be very comfortable, and that's important, because I think once you're comfortable, then you can focus on your surroundings and the music from that. I might even bring a little bit of Tibetan bowl sounds into it. And the reason for that is because it's such a pure sound that it kind of sharpens your focus and your attention. So while you're looking very relaxed, you can actually then just focus entirely on experiencing the music as sound. And I know that might sound a bit obvious, but, you know, music is sound and vibrations. And I think sometimes we forget that, especially as pianists, because there are so many notes most of the time. It's like, oh, look at all these notes I'm playing. But actually, it is sound, it is vibration. And I just, I love it. I love the resonances from the piano. And my job, I feel, is to draw people's attention to the resonance. So that's like the sound that happens beyond playing the chords, whatever, on the piano, and then just listening with interest. So I become an active listener as I'm listening to that, and then what I play that follows that then responds to that resonance, which will be unique to every piano, every space. And having been at the space last year, I'm just really looking forward to I think it would be quite epic being there, everyone lying down, beautiful Steinway piano, and what more could you ask for? And there's some repertoire on there as well, which is something, repertoire that people may know, and but I hope will hear in a completely new way. And Meredith Monk and some Debussy, which I absolutely love, and a lot of Debussy's music is kind of really allows the pianist to bring out different subtleties and nuances at the piano, and I think it's lovely to have space around that to just really follow the sound and be curious about it. And some William Byrd as well. I can't wait either. It's gonna be lovely.
So Alistair mentioned last week in the bonus episode of the podcast we did our visit to you in Burford to come and experience this, and I'm so glad you're bringing In a Landscape, the piece by Cage. It's a piece I've used a lot to teach my composition students about repetition and creating a sense of space and atmosphere in music, because it's such a simple piece, but it's so hard to write a convincing piece like that that I think it's a real challenge for us composers to think about creating that sense of landscape and peace and tranquility and through repetition and through harmony. And it's a very beautiful piece, as is the Debussy you'll be bringing and everything else, and I can't wait to hear the bird. That will be great. And I remember that really fondly. I have to admit, I'm slightly disappointed you won't be playing that the piece of Bach you played in Burford. I think it was something from one of the French suites, but it was just absolutely perfect in context.
I really, really. Yeah. Oh, Yeah. There's so many great, so much great music. And that John Cage actually is especially surprising. I think sometimes people, when they hear, oh, John Cage on the program, is that going to be all, you know, plinkety blonkety is often the term that people think of. And it's incredible, yeah, that he actually created some of these very, very beautiful piano pieces. There's another one called Dream, which is a similar feel to it. And he was a practicing Buddhist. So he understood this sense of serenity and peace. And he was a real kind of, he was obviously a pioneer and in music making and composition, but also like the whole approach to what is sound, what is silence. And so I think he kind of really embodies that beautiful Zen like feeling. And actually, I think when you listen to any recording of him speaking, he's just, you know, he would be like the ideal yoga teacher, because he just has this beautiful, reassuring voice. And yeah, so I think that's why it sort of translates into the music that he wrote, and his creativity. I think the fact that he's able to that he was so creative, and I'm sure that's something to do with being a practitioner of Buddhism or meditation and these different approaches to music. I'm curious, actually, what do you teach with this particular piece? Have you sort of found what it is within that particular piece that makes it sound so heavenly?
I mean, it's I've often taught it in the context of repetition, and you get a lot of younger, especially composition students, who maybe write in this sort of semi-minimalist or post-minimalist way, yet perhaps slightly unthinkingly sometimes. And I think it's for those students who are interested in repetition, interested in sort of simplicity of gesture and sort of not too many musical objects creating the piece, but being able to, you know, stretch pieces out over a reasonably long span without traveling to too many different zones or new sections, not too many contrasts. I think it does all of that. I think the harmonies are very beautiful, the way they, you know, it gradually evolves. So it does that minimalist thing in a way. I don't think it is a minimalist piece, but it has the best of minimalism, in that it gradually evolves and sort of unfolds and reaches these lovely high notes, without jumping too much. So it's all of that. It's the fluidity of the piece. I think it's the sort of harmonic evolution of the piece. And it's just the way it's so repetitive on one level, but it's never boring. That yes. I think, you know, is just a great thing to sort of get across to young composers who want to. Often you find in composition, you know, you have a piece that has one idea, and then you move on to another section with another idea, and then the next section with another idea. It's much better practice in those early days when you're sort of, your voice is evolving as a composer, to try and write a longer form piece with just maybe one or two focused ideas. And obviously John Cage was great at doing that. And it's funny you mentioned about, you know, John Cage, and I do think it, you know, it sometimes puts people's backs up, doesn't it, talking about Cage, because there's so little they know about his output, which was so prolific. Composers are often the opposite. They find Cage very comforting. It's like, well, you know, or maybe, you know, there were other composers, you know, Donatoni found Cage troubling, and that the whole concept of that freedom in music and the compositional process difficult. But many composers find it really comforting to know that, you know, well, John Cage has done this, and, you know, we can develop on these ideas, because, you know, every piece had a new concept, a new idea. And within that, you can, you know, take your own musical journey from it and see it as a starting point, perhaps. At least that's, you know, that's how I approach Cage's music. It's just full of possible ideas for us to draw on.
So it's
a great piece. And I think also just writing for piano, it's not too dense. It's quite linear, obviously. You don't have, you know, and I think that's the temptation again for younger composers is to write lots of block chords and, you know, how many notes can we play at once sort of thing. And this sort of strips that back and says you can write in these lines and shapes horizontally a bit more. So do you feel the same things or do you see the piece slightly different?
Yeah, no, I do agree with what you're saying. I really like that you teach that piece and make people aware that there is this other side to John Cage. And then just as an atmosphere that particular choice of notes and harmonies creates. And also I think the piece is kind of made, it forms a certain mathematical structure, which I think was quite planned out, the way it repeats, but it's very hypnotic. And whenever I play that, I kind of go into this trance and I can really feel the atmosphere. Although I have to say in Lie Down and Listen concerts, it is sometimes a point where people dip into, let's say, an altered state.
Yeah. Does that mean the odd bit of snoring occurs?
Maybe, but John Cage would say, you know, that's all part of it. That's what his 4 minutes 33 was all about. It's like, well, actually, the sounds that you hear within the space, every single sound is part of the performance. You know, it's and what Pauline Olivieros would call a listening field. It's everything that you hear, and the Buddhist approach is to accept every single sound that you hear as part of the music. It's not only the piano. You know, you can listen to a recording on some headphones that cancel out all other sound, and that would be a very pure way. But actually, it's all those sounds that are around, you know, like the birds singing outside and, you know, accepting the shuffles and the snoring and, yeah, just welcoming it as part of the experience. And occasionally, so I did a concert for some friends last week, and there was a baby who made a sound, and it was the most beautiful sound, and it was actually in tune with the note I was playing at that very point. And for me, that is absolutely worth having the baby there and not trying to make everything muted, because it was beautiful.
Yeah, you don't have to understand the reason for all of these sort of acoustic interactions, but you can just sort of you know, relinquish control a little bit and just enjoy what's happening around you more. So I think that's a really really valuable thing to encourage in you know, concerts, and when we come to listen collectively like that. It's funny you mentioned Pauline Olivieros, because that's some of the sort of her experimentation with the accordion in The Fool's Circle, and, you know, those recordings she did, I use as well in teaching, because I am also attracted to that sort of hypnotic sound. And, well, how is that created? You know, can we sort of figure out what makes pieces sort of hypnotic and engaging in that way? And pieces that I talked to Anne about this as well. You know, how can you create music to sort of slow down time and give that effect of, you know, breathing and gradually slowing and slightly, you know, altered state in music. So it's really interesting to hear that's repertoire that you sort of are inspired by too.
Yeah, certainly, like her whole ethos and ideas around listening. It's wonderful that you teach about that and share those ideas. I think they're really, really important. And I think a lot of musicians are drawn to those ideas and like how listening can actually really impact our environment. And and actually, so this is something I'm going to be, I'm giving a talk the day after the Late Night Lie Down and Listen concert at the festival. So I'm certainly going to be talking about Pauline and Hildegard von Bingen, and lots of ideas around listening and like different practices of how we can use this. Yeah.
Great. So, well, tell us about this project then that you've been doing with Tom Middleton about Hildegard. That sounds really fascinating too.
Yes. Oh, that was a fantastic collaboration and project. It was fairly daunting as well initially, because we were creating a piece of music that was first to be experienced. It's actually at King's Place, and it was through, I can't remember how many speakers, but it was at least 80 different speakers. So it was a real kind of immersive sound. And actually what Tom was then able to do with the electronic sound, so he created electronic sounds as well as nature soundscapes, and then was actually able to move that around the room. And we were influenced by a painting by Hildegard von Bingen, and the painting was The Universe, and this painting actually came from one of her own visions. So she was a composer, 12th century composer, priestess, visionary, and plant medicine healer as well. And she couldn't write down music, but she found a way with like the other nuns to record the music that she had written. So all these different elements, like the art and the music and the sound, were all like intermingled. And we were using this painting, The Universe, which represents all the different elements, fire, wind, earth, water, all these different elements, and really sort of the contrast, the dark and the light. So this was experienced lying down, this piece of music. So it was for piano, and it's like a 50-minute piece of music, and it kind of takes you through the journey of this vision that she had. So it opens with this place that she was, there's a burning fire, so with flames so dark she couldn't look, and there's the darkness of the cloud, and then it sort of evolves and resolves into the light finally, and there's this like epic kind of glorious moment at the end of that.
That sounds amazing. Project. Yeah, something you need to experience, I suppose, and not something maybe you could listen to on a recording. I'd love definitely. To. Is there any footage of it? Can we see anything online?
Yes, there is. On my YouTube, there's some clips from that performance, and yeah, that was certainly very, very memorable moment. And there were some people who, people really profoundly felt the music, and a few people actually said they wanted to scream at one point. But it was a good way. The way they were describing it, it was like there was just this resonance with the darkness of the music, and then that release. Because I think, sometimes, especially like in the wellness space, there can be a little bit of a just look at the light, don't look at the darkness. But what Hildegard kind of explored both of those, and that was great.
Well, I'm really intrigued by that that side of things in music generally, again, it reminds me of do you know the second part of Louis Andriessen's De Matterie, the piece about another mystic, probably 13th century Dutch mystic, Harderwijk. And it explores many of the similar themes, around sort of passion, and these very extreme visions, sort of spiritual and erotic, and other but really interesting music that accompanies that, again, really structured. I think it's around an architectural plan of a cathedral. So, it reminds me of what you're saying about Cage. We hear this music, it's very free, and that surely if it's sort of meditative and calming, it's written quite loosely and really, but actually they often this music needs to be structured very carefully so that it brings out those sort of dramatic elements, the light and the dark. So I wish I was there to experience that piece. because I think, yeah, that sounds fantastic. Again, I know you brought Arvo Pärt to the festival last year, and I hear that in his music as well. And again, I've used his music in teaching to express how, you know, even when you have this wonderfully lucid, you know, beautiful music, there's always something there underlying in the texture that's a bit darker, or trying to fight against this. This beauty and this light. And I think that's really important in music, that we have both sides always, and there's a bit of a struggle and a bit of drama. So yeah, would you agree? Do you hear that in Arvo Pärt's music?
Yeah, absolutely. And he talks about how he struggles with the complexity, and is kind of seeking that simplicity. But I think the struggle with the complexity and going through the complexity is what, and it's that contrast which makes the simplicity even more pure. And yeah, like you say, that darkness. And of course, us as humans, we have both those elements within each of us. So it's, I think it naturally resonates.
I'm really looking forward to your talk on all of this, as well as your recital. I'll remind people who might want to buy tickets that you are performing on Saturday, May the 25th, the final thing in the evening, 10 o'clock. And that's the lie down and listen with that wonderful program you mentioned earlier. And then it's the following morning. You'll have to remind me of the time. I don't have it to hand, but it's the following morning at Palmer's Hall, isn't it? Yes. And people can find out information at ludlowpianofestival.com.
Yes, I can't wait to be back. It should be really special. And yeah, I'm looking forward to coming along some of the other events as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us. It's been really interesting. And I think anyone tuning in will definitely want to come and hear you play and speak at the upcoming festival. I look forward to seeing you then.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Joel.
Thanks, Christina. Bye.
Bye.
This is Alistair McGowan, founder of the Ludlow Piano Festival. Our second festival takes place between May the 22nd and May the 26th, 2024. 19 events in 5 days at 3 different venues in this beautiful and historic Shropshire town of Ludlow. You can book now for any of the events, or hey, all of the events, at ludlowpianofestival.com. I hope to see you at something there.